Cigars in Cinema.
Will you bring in the cigars, please?
The movie review podcast that tackles the smoky side of cinema.
Cigar, Mike!
Each week, we review a movie that contains, in some way, shape, or form, someone smoking a cigar.
Cigars.
Fire is good.
We'll talk about who smoked it, where they smoked it, how they smoked it, and we'll probably make fun of them if they have no idea what they're doing.
What are you doing?
You never light a cigar that way.
So sit back, light up, and enjoy the podcast that has it all. Cigars.
Cigar. Smoke it.
Smoke it.
Movies.
Say hello to my little friend!
And General Mayhem.
My doggy! Wah!
Hi, mateys.
Yar! Welcome to the show! You're spending all me money, SpongeBob!
That's their intro from now on.
There you go.
I'm going to be Mr. Krabs the whole time. Yeah, that's weird, not saying hello, hello, hello.
Howdy, folks, and welcome to the... Oh,
howdy, I'm Texas Dan. What's his damn name?
Big Tex.
Big Tex, or Texas Dan.
Texas Dan.
Jeez. Welcome to the first ever episode of Cigars in Cinema. There's a little bit of confusion right now, because we don't know what the hell we're going to say when we open this
flux.
Show. Yeah, I am Brandon Luna.
I'm Randy Rankin.
And this is the first episode of our cigar-related cinema show.
Exactly.
Something we're doing a little different. It's not cinema, because we had some issues with that.
Right.
This is Cigars in Cinema.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
So the concept here for the show is that we're going to talk about a movie each week, review a movie, actually, that has cigars in it. And I'm going to get pretty detailed as far as where the cigars in the movie for you guys that want to like actually get to that part and see them smoking the cigars. If you're that kind of weirdo, I'm right there for
Freak.
You. Freako suave. So that we're going to do. We're also going to get into some entertainment news in the second part of the show, and then also give you a little preview of what we're going to be reviewing next week.
Exactly.
So it's a little different than our last show. We're not going to be physically reviewing a cigar. We will be still smoking cigars, and today's we're smoking a couple of
new
LFDs
that we were given.
That we were given by Andy Yaffe. So big thanks to Andy Yaffe. He's the local area LFD rep over here in Texas.
Good dude.
Very good dude, yes. So, Cigars in Cinema, the concept we've been talking about for a long time when we did Calypso Cigar Review. And if you're familiar with us, it's probably from Calypso Cigar Review. But this is just something a little different. Actually, if you are interested in finding out more about movies that actually have cigars in them, you look online, you do the Google, you do the Google search, right?
The Google?
The Google, yeah,
right.
That's what I'm calling it, the Google. And there's plenty of information out there. The best one probably being the definitive list over at Cigar Asylum. So if you go to Cigar Asylum, which is a cigar nerd forum, for cigar nerds. I wouldn't say it's really a nerd forum, but if you're a cigar nerd, you know what cigar forums are.
Right.
There's, you know, Stogie Friends and Puff and all these other Cigar Federation, whatever.
Right.
Well, Cigar Asylum has this great list of movies that have cigars in them. It's a running list. People add to it all the time. There's like over 2,000 movies on there. I'm going to put the link to that list in the show notes at the bottom of the show. So if you're looking at us or listening to us on iTunes, iHeartRadio.
They're not looking at us on iTunes.
Yes, they can't.
You.
No. Okay. Well, no, because we're not doing video for this show. But if you're listening to us on iTunes or iHeartRadio or one of those places, you'll be able to look at the show notes and see where the list is. You can click on it and look at it for yourself. And, you know, any help you guys can give these guys, you know, go to the forum, sign up, be a part of that forum. It's a great thing. If you want to add something to the list, if you're just not seeing a certain movie that you think of offhand that's not on the list, feel free to add it, become a part of that actual forum and do that. And, you know, if there's anything that you guys want us to review in particular, you can tweet us over at Cigars in Cinema on the Twitter. On the Twitter.
Right.
I said the Twitter.
The Twitter. Is it in cinema?
In the Twitter? No, it's Cigars IN Cinema. Yes.
Okay. All right.
It's all one word.
Gotcha.
So it's at, that little at symbol. You know, that everybody uses
Twitter.
Now.
I'm just wondering if it's cigars in, you know, like apostrophe
I-N.
In.
Okay. Nope. I actually got Cigars in Cinema,
okay,
so
cool.
I was able to get that. Yeah, that's great.
Just trying to clarify it up for our
No, that's good. That's a good thing to do. So today is going to be the first movie. We're starting at the A's, and usually when you get into the A's, it starts with numbers and stuff before as well. So we're not going to plan on really doing that. We're not going to start, you know,
right.
Each episode's not going to be A, B, C, D. We're not going to go that crazy with it. But this is a movie that we both actually enjoy. And it's
very guy-centric.
Yeah, very guy-centric. And it is 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
Exactly. Very interesting movie. Very interesting concept.
This will be where I play the trailer.
This is where you play the trailer.
Yeah.
We're silent. Boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. I'm Kevin Costner. I've got a hairpiece.
I was Wyatt Earp.
I'm Christian Slater.
No, I'm Kurt Russell. I was Wyatt Earp.
Oh, we're dueling Wyatt Earps. We're buddies now. Let's make a movie together.
You ready to play?
Always ready to play.
Good.
at the Riviera Hotel and Casino, and it's International Elvis Week.
It was a night.
The king may have left the building.
I don't know what the big deal is. That porker's been dead for 20 years now.
But two guys have come to steal the show.
Hey, man.
Try to think of us as the Osmonds, only we don't get along.
One's got his style.
Hey, Elvis, you look great.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
The other has his attitude.
Long time no see.
I'm your partner. Sometimes I actually think you believe you're the king himself. In the flesh.
You stole my car, you stole my money.
You're so paranoid.
Damn it, you almost hit me.
Are you nuts?
Probably.
What is it with those sideburns? I glued mine on for the job. For you, it's an actual lifestyle.
So I robbed the casino.
Because everybody else robs banks.
Time to go to work, baby.
They're taking the act to Vegas.
Main booth, scramble security.
Come on!
And bringing down the house.
Hey, man. It's always a pleasure taking care of business with you.
This could have been easy.
Wow, you must think I'm some cheap date, huh?
Thousand miles to Graceland.
Nope.
No, but I do everything else.
Nasty habit.
Okay. So anyway, so the concept of this movie here is that if you want to give us your version of it,
okay.
We'll see. But
here's what. Okay, the premise is that Kurt Russell and Kevin Costner were obviously in the same prison. And they had decided while they were in prison that when they got out, they were going to plan this ultimate heist. So they come up with a dream team, basically, of people that they think would be great to help in this heist. And that's like David Arquette, Christian Slater, Bokeem Woodbine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be all of them, right?
Yeah. These guys.
And then, of course, Howie Long is the
helicopter driver. These guys should have been wearing red shirts because they had absolutely no part in the movie other than to be dead.
Right.
You know, that and, you can tell right off the bat.
And the way they decide to pull off this heist is to go to Vegas during Elvis week and rob a bank dressed up like Elvis, because how are you going to know who these people are? Because everybody in town is going to be dressed like Elvis at this Elvis convention.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the setup or the plot. The setup is Kurt Russell shows up in the middle of a desert, runs into Courtney Cox, back when she was still smoking hot.
Oh, yeah.
And her son, she runs this motel or seedy little hotel off the side of the road in the desert. And he's waiting for Costner to show up with the team.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got?
And he hooks up with Courtney Cox. And Courtney Cox is in her prime in this movie.
Yes.
I will say that she looked damn good. This is around, see, it's 2001.
Right.
Is the date of the release of this film.
2000, yeah.
This is around season 7, season 8 of Friends.
Mm-hmm.
To give you an idea of the magnitude of star power that's in this movie, you've got Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
You've got your guy, Kevin Costner.
Yeah. You've
got Christian Slater, hot off the trail of doing nothing for a long time. You've got Howie Long.
Costner throws him bones a lot because he's been in a few Costner
movies. You got Howie Long, who, you know.
NFL Hall of Famer.
This is pre-Firestorm, I think, maybe?
No, it was post.
Post-Firestorm. Yeah. Okay, post-Firestorm. He looks really young in this.
Yeah.
I don't know what he looks really young.
And he's of course, NFL Hall of Famer. He's on NFL Fox Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Oh, he's actually a Hall of Famer. Okay.
Yeah, he is an actual
Hall of Famer. Versus, listen to the previous episode to understand what we're talking about.
Right.
You know, Bokeem Woodbine, Courtney Cox, Kevin Pollak has a great role in this. John Lovitz, Thomas Hayden Church.
So it's got one of his last movies before he decided to retire, before he got this Sideways job.
Yep. So so it's got a good cast.
It really does.
To give you an idea of the year that these guys had, you look at you know, the Friends. Obviously, Courtney Cox is doing Friends. The same year that Kurt Russell did Vanilla Sky. The same year that Christian Slater did. Who is Cletus Tout? I have no idea what that is.
What is Cletus Tout?
And Zoolander. And Bokeem Woodbine had The Breed. I don't know what that
never
is.
Never heard of it.
Courtney Cox was in The Shrink Is In and Get Well Soon on top of Friends.
Okay.
Kevin Pollak was in The Wedding Planner and Dr. Dolittle 2.
Okay.
So he's probably had the most success so
far,
based on the year. John Lovitz was in Rat Race, Cats and Dogs, and Good Advice. So he had,
decent, he had a good
pretty
run
good
there.
Year, guess, too. Yeah. Thomas Hayden Church, Monkey Bone. That's
not a bad movie.
That's all he's got. Ice-T, who was also in this movie, who had a great role, by the
right,
way,
yeah,
was in nine freaking movies
nine
this year, including one with Mr. Steven Seagal.
Really?
So he worked the most out of anybody that year.
Ice-T.
But all these movies, no one's ever heard of. They were right. all straight to video, right. you know, I'm a thug kind of guys.
Right.
So yeah,
what cost have gone on Dragonfly or something?
That was it. This is it. The only movie he had that year. Okay. Yeah. So
yeah, but you think he had Dragonfly in 13 Days sandwiched around that? Or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I mean, you know, these people were all pretty busy at around this time. What I noticed about this movie that kind of was odd to me is the director of this movie. How the hell did he get a movie this large? Did you look at this guy's filmography?
Yeah,
he's got nothing.
He was, I think he was an MTV guy or something.
I don't know, but I mean, it just like
okay, the feel of the movie. This is right at the height of Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
The feel of it is very Tarantino-like, with more MTV-like special effects and, you know...
Yeah, the titles are all scratchy-looking. Right, yeah. They look kind of grindhouse-y.
I thought the scorpion fight was kind of fun.
The scorpion fight at the end is the most ridiculous thing.
No, I thought it was hilarious.
No point to the movie.
No, it doesn't, but I thought it was...
I remember when I saw this the first time, I'm like, what the freaking crap is this giant CGI scorpion fight?
Right.
And what does this have to do with the movie?
They're in the
but
desert.
It leads into the first scene, and there is a scorpion theme throughout the movie. So
well,
it's kind
because
of, you know,
Kevin Costner and Kurt Russell are the dueling scorpions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Kurt, you know, we see Kevin's scorpion tattoo. We don't really see Kirk's, I don't think.
Right.
But, you know, it's still, it's kind of cheesy. I mean, the CGI is bad, so...
Yeah.
It kind of puts you in a weird... It puts you in one or two moods with this movie. Either like, oh, this is off the rails, it's going to be crazy fun, or what the hell is this? You know, so you got one of two minds.
Right.
And I think the first time I saw this movie, I was like, oh, this is off the rails, it's going to be awesome.
Right.
This time I saw it, I'm going, wow, that's really bad.
Yeah, it just came out 14 years ago.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly.
Now, the interesting thing was this was not too far after Kevin Costner and Kurt Russell both came off playing Wyatt Earp in Tombstone and Wyatt Earp, respectively. And so... I had a buddy who thought Kurt Russell was the better Wyatt Earp. I thought Kevin Costner was. So we were like, we had to go see the movie together. You know,
yeah,
it was still kind of cool. And I liked that the writer, you know, one of them has to be the real bad guy. There's a bad guy, and then there's the real bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Costner's the real bad guy.
Yeah, and this was really the first time I'd seen him go. Now
Full-blown
baddie. Now, he has a moment. Now, this is going to be spoilers. I mean, there's going to be spoilers all over this. The thing is 2001.
Right.
So if you haven't seen this movie by now, stop the podcast, go watch the movie, then come back because we're going to have spoilers. But he plays a badass. He plays the worst possible human being that you can be up until one point at the end of the film where he does one nice thing. And I really thought it kind of cheapened his character. When he gave the kid, he's like, here's the last of the money, kid, and he throws the kid the money.
Yeah.
The kid bonded with Kurt Russell, and there was that whole thing in the movie, and it kind of made sense. But he never really bonded with the kid. I never saw the connection with the kid. The kid tried to be funny with him, and he punched the kid in the face.
Right.
I mean, that's how much of an asshole he is. You know, so
right.
for him to have that moment of reflection and to do something nice, it felt kind of false to me.
Yeah,
but
I almost
want to know if that was Kevin's choice to kind of lighten the character. That can't be a total asshole, or if that was the director's choice, or if that was in the script, or what, you know, where that came from.
Right.
But he really was an asshole in this movie.
He really was. He and Kurt Russell had some good dialogue, you know, when so basically what'll happen is that, once again, we're spoiling it.
Yeah.
Okay, so they pull off the heist.
Mm-hmm.
Joaquin Woodbine gets shot.
Oh, and I love that Paul Anka was
a
mob pit boss in this.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah, and he, of course, hated
Elvis.
Awesome. He hated Elvis.
Exactly. That was awesome.
And, of course, you got to see Kurt Russell do his little Elvis accent, accent, but what's
his
the
Elvis.
Word? His Elvis voice. Yeah,
yeah, his impersonation.
Yeah.
In the elevator. Like,
you
look so great! Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And then at the end, you got to watch the ending closing credits. He does
they're really great.
Number and,
closing credits are awesome.
It's great. Okay, so they'll meet up at the hotel, dividing up the money.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Costner has to pull I get the dead guy's share, you know, and so Christian Slater has to challenge him, and Costner's that one good line. He goes, "You're forgetting the golden rule." Who was the gold plated gets the gold, or something?
Yeah.
The nickel plated gets the gold, and he shoots him. It's cool. So of course he turns on all the guys, thinks he's killed them all, escapes with the money. Kurt Russell didn't die. Kurt Russell didn't trust him.
So he had a bulletproof
vest on,
and he lived.
So now he's
to
trying
fuck
to hunt
another
the money.
Day.
Oh, they were going to go to a money launderer. Exactly. They were going to go to a money launderer. So Kurt Russell knew where Costner was going to go with the money. So he's kind of tracking him down.
Yeah.
And there's that funny scene that, so Costner gets there first, the money launderer, who happens to be John Lovitz.
Mm-hmm.
And Boy, does he fuck with John Lovitz,
man. Yeah, big time.
He tortures the fuck out of him. And then one of my favorite lines, though, is when he says, he goes, open that safe. He's like, you're going to kill me if I open the safe. He goes, you're going to kill me, aren't you? He goes, well, not till you open the safe.
Yeah. And I love that Kevin got to use his previous bow and arrow experience from Robin Hood in the film.
Right.
He fires a couple pretty close to John Lovitz.
There's some little scenes you got to kind of pay attention to. That scene where he's taking that quiz on the toilet. If you read the questions,
That was do you want to have sex with men? No. Have you ever had rough sex with men? Well, yeah. Because he was in prison. In prison. The one that got me, so there's a couple moments in the film that are very Tarantino-ish. You know, him going into the gas station, killing the guy, and then the girl wants to go with him, and she goes with him, and she's got these, get your bubble gum, and she goes and gets her bubble gum. And the scene that grossed me out there was when the bikers are pulling up next to him. Now, did you get a sense that he knew these guys, or was it just
that he did and he was
going
to drop?
Probably
her
knew him from you know, from prison or whatever. Right. So the bikers are like, "Where are you going?" He's like, "Here." He's like, "Where are you going?" He's like, "You having a good time?" And then she's in his lap giving him a blowjob. Mm-hmm. He pulls her head up, and they're like, "Oh," you know. But then this is gross. She gives him a kiss, and he gets the cock bubble gum. She was chewing bubble gum while she was giving him head.
I thought about that.
Like, and then he's like chewing cock bubble gum. He's like, "Yeah, baby, I'm chewing." I would have been like, "Why'd you give me my cock bubble gum?"
I guess he didn't finish.
I hope not. Yeah, that or his previous, going off the
stuff,
prison stuff. He's a little less worried about it.
There was one scene that's so superfluous, but I liked it.
Yeah,
the whole cowboy cop.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
It's,
why?
It's so superfluous, but it was still a fun scene. It was still a fun scene.
It was totally superfluous. Did not need to be. It was more like the director's like, "Hey, I know this guy's pretty cool. He wants to be in the movie. I'll put him in a scene. Okay, we'll do a showdown. All right, I'm good."
Sure. Costner gets to do a little Western thing here. Yeah. So, okay. Now, there's a little backstory, and then we'll get back to the plot and stuff.
Okay.
It was a first-time director, and he was, you know, I guess, a little intimidated working with Costner and Kurt Russell because they both directed movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so he invited them in on the editing process.
Yeah.
And he let Kurt do an edit, and he let Costner do an edit, and he played it for test audiences, didn't tell the audience who did what.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell's wanted to focus more on the Courtney Cox relationship, probably because he wanted to do her more.
Yeah.
And Costner wanted to focus more on the action side of it. And the Costner edit won over the test audience. So I'm wondering maybe that was part of it, just have more action.
So yeah. So it said, Kurt, this is going off IMDb. We're going to cite our sources here. IMDb said, Kurt, Russell's cut was more comedy oriented and focused on his character's relationship with Sybil, Courtney Cox, while Costner's was more action oriented. And of course, you know, this was Costner getting to be a badass and get to do some action stuff. Yeah. So I'm sure that's why his version was more and more cut towards the action side of things. So, you know, so the basic plot is, you know, it's a lot of double crossing stuff going on.
Yeah.
And Kurt Russell ends up, you know, hooking up with Courtney and the kid, you know, Courtney Cox has a kid, and kind of traveling. It becomes a road movie at this point to try and get the money and get it taken care of so that nobody gets caught. But, you know, of course, there is a showdown. So
now Thomas Hayden Church and Kevin Pollak play the cops that are hunting them down.
Yeah, yeah.
And the tie-in for the title, and I won't get it exactly right, but apparently wherever they were, that was 3,000 miles to Graceland. That meaning the house, because there's a backstory. This is actually a true story. When Elvis died, in his will he did declare that Lisa Marie gets all his, you know, his estate unless someone could prove that he had a illegitimate child, and then that child would also get to take part in the estate. Well, in the movie they declared that when they did this, two people tested positive as Elvis's sons. So you're kind of being led throughout the whole movie that Costner's one of them and Kurt Russell's the other one.
Yeah.
So there's that backstory going on.
Mm-hmm.
So Pollak and Church are kind of Keystone Cop-ish a little bit.
Yeah, very much so.
And like I said, this movie's far-fetched. Don't get me wrong. It's not it's not the greatest movie ever. But it's fun. It's got a lot of action. It's got some good dialogue.
Yeah, it's definitely fun.
And it's kind of cool to see people playing against type.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Russell, of course, was the good bad guy. A little sappy at times, but he was also pretty hardcore, too, because he did not want to hook up with Courtney Cox. He didn't want her traveling with him.
Exactly.
He pretty much left her on the side of the road, basically, like, see ya. But he felt bad because of the kid. And of course, the kid's got to be one of those stereotypes where he's a badass and he can trick the adults and you know, that kind of thing. You know, never been disciplined in his life. You try to discipline him, boy, he's going to turn it back around on you kind of thing. You know. But
It's one of the few movies with a kid in it that I actually didn't mind the kid. I thought the kid was actually really good.
Yeah.
The kid had skills. I mean, he's a good actor. He's you know, doing stuff for, you know, stealing wallets and shit. That was kind of cool. You know?
Right.
That was kind of neat.
And he wore a gun belt with a cap down all the time, you know, which was cool.
And I like Costner's little thing. Hey, kid, you ever shoot anybody with one of those? That's cool stuff. So this is a neat little fact from IMDb here. The album that Michael autographs, which Michael is Kurt Russell, in the elevator, is in fact the soundtrack to It Happened at the World's Fair, which is a movie where Kurt Russell actually kicked the shin of the real Elvis Presley.
Yeah, and he really did kick him.
Yeah.
And Elvis's reaction is like, well, the reception's like, oh, that's a good kick there, son, or something like that. Yeah. But, how cool is that? You're a kid, you get to play in a movie where you get to kick Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
Then your first real major role is you're playing Elvis.
Yep.
And then you get to come back to it, you know, 25, 30 years later and get to revisit the Elvis thing again.
Wow. Wow. That? Yeah, that's kind of cool, you know? Yeah. That's a pretty cool little career span there, you know? Yeah. Okay, so this is kind of interesting. During the casino heist near the beginning of the movie, Kurt Russell's wearing the white Elvis suit while Kevin Costner's wearing the black Elvis suit. This foreshadows the good versus evil relationship between Michael and Murphy, which is later said. Yeah, you know, I didn't really notice that, but yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the scenes were edited out due to extreme violence.
Hmm.
Yeah, the scene in which the security guard is killed by way of shotgun was originally bloodier, and the scene featured a close shot of the guard being shot and the blood spraying from his back. The scene where Christian Slater is shot in the leg was originally bloodier, and the scene where the state trooper is shot by Murphy was also extended. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's... And that's weird, because there's a lot of blood in that movie, but they actually edited some of it out. So the there's a great ending scene, I think, you know, with the big shootout.
Yeah.
Where Ice-T has his moment.
His little spinning upside down shooting thing. I'm like, wow, really? Awesome. Ice-T was like, yo, man, I'll do the movie if I can spin upside down and shoot some people. All right, that's fine, whatever.
And they play it so cool, kind of cool. They do it in slow motion, and, you know, Costner's just getting shot at, and, you know, they finally catch up to him, and they're playing Elvis's version of My Way.
Yeah.
This is, of course, talking about the end of his life, you know. And so Costner dies to My Way, which was kind of cool, you know. And I love Thomas Hayden Church's line. He goes, I'd have gone out the same way, or I'm glad he went out that way, or something like that. You know, cheesy, but it still was kind of funny.
See, I think about when you mentioned the whole line about 3,000 miles from Graceland, first thing I thought is there's no way that's 3,000 miles of Graceland, because that'd be a lot further. But then I realized, you realize later in the movie that the boat is named Graceland.
Right.
And that's where it was parked in Alaska, which is actually 3,000 miles away from Graceland. So my question is, if it was the boat that they were talking about, why weren't they out at the boat waiting for him? You know, like giant plot hole, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
And it is going to be your boat, and you were an Elvis that stole a bunch of money, change the name of the damn boat.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And then at the end, we get the notion that Kurt Russell probably was one of the illegitimate kids of Elvis.
Yeah.
He looks more like Elvis than Costner does.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Costner does not look good in the Elvis outfit.
No. Not he was a bad Elvis.
And
actually, I remember when I saw this movie originally in the theater, my first thought was that, and I was always kind of on the fence with Costner. It's like some roles you can tell he's really into and he does a great job. Mm-hmm. Other roles, when it's not his, it seems like, you know, his thing is like, if it's not my gig or I'm not really into this and doing it for the money, I'm not going to really, you know, do a whole lot. Mm-hmm. He has a minimalist acting thing. And that first scene when the guy from Scream, what's his name?
David Arquette.
David Arquette's making jokes about Elvis, and he stops. He's like, "Who said that?" Yeah. I was like, "Wow, you weren't bringing your A game to this movie at all."
I didn't think that scene
was bad.
Later
he's fine. I just didn't think his acting was great in that one little. His reaction to that was bad me.
It's like fuck Sinatra.
Yeah, I know, but his acting wasn't good in that scene. Yeah. But it was better as he went along. He definitely worked his way into the role.
Would have played that differently.
I don't know.
He was just like, fuck you, you know.
Just the way he didn't play it as angry as I think he would have played it. I don't know.
Well, you got to remember at first, he's not wanting to piss off Kurt Russell.
Mm.
And you get the sense that Kurt Russell's only doing this for the money.
Yeah.
And Kurt's the one trying to give him the look like,
Exactly. And once they get to this casino and shit hits the fan, I think Kurt Russell, this is probably cut out, or maybe they didn't film it, but I had a sense that he thought it was going to be a robbery. We've got all this thing planned. It's going to be easy. No one's going to get hurt.
Right.
You know, we got guns, but we're not going to use them. I think that's kind of how Costner probably presented it to him to get him involved, because he was the guy that did all the elevator stuff and all that stuff.
Right. Which, by the way, his part made no sense.
Exactly.
What did he do? He didn't do a damn thing. He just fucked with an elevator.
He fucked with the elevator. He brought the elevator to him. I mean, I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense to me either, but... you go with it because it's one of these type of movies. But then he opens the elevator door and there's all these dead bodies and he's like, you see his face, he's like, oh shit, you know? And like he wouldn't have heard that in the elevator.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, it was just, you know, you get a sense automatically that, that he's not the killer that Costner is.
Right.
And that, you know, there's just a definite division between them.
Yeah.
But yet at the very beginning of the movie, it's like, you know, hey, we are friends,
mm-hmm.
and you're my partner in
right.
this.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty interesting. But as far as cigars in the cinema, let's get to that, actually, that information. We're going to do it here now. Mm-hmm. So where are the cigars in this particular cinematic masterpiece? Well, at 2 minutes, 36 seconds, Kurt Russell smokes what I would probably call a cigarillo or a cigarette because it is a filtered cigar.
Filtered, yeah.
The first time he walks out of the car, he's got what looks like a cigarillo.
It's a homogenized cigar.
It's a filtered cigar.
Right.
Then at 4 minutes, 40 seconds, same thing. Howie Long is officially the only person in this movie that actually smokes a cigar.
Mm-hmm.
At 12 minutes, 43 seconds in, Howie Long has a cigar when he's waiting for him at the helicopter. Now, I don't know about you, but the way that Howie Long holds a cigar looks really odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was almost holding it like Bob Dole holds a pen. He was just like, I'm Bob Dole. He's holding it like this. I'm like, are you burning the shit out of your hand? How are you holding your cigar like
that's
that?
That's weird because I thought he was a cigar smoker. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But it just maybe he was just holding it really like, you know, it was almost like it was up too far
like
close to his
microphone,
face.
Like
yeah, it was almost like the, you know, he thought it was a closer shot than it was because mm-hmm. it's a far back shot of him. It's like, you know, just it's pants up.
Right.
And he's holding the cigar like right by his face. It looks really odd to
yeah.
me. But then he puffs on it and it's fine. But it just I was laughing at the way he's holding the cigar.
Yeah,
like, it doesn't look like he knows how to smoke a cigar. And then at 1 hour, 20 minutes in, we get the obligatory, hey, kid, you want to smoke cigarettes? Let's smoke a cigarette.
Right.
Where Kurt Russell takes off the filter and the kid pukes all over the place.
Right.
Which I'm sure has happened to many people all over the world.
Right.
So you definitely get along with that story. That makes sense, too. So. But that's it. Nobody else really smokes any cigars in the movie. But it's there. So for those cigar nerds that want to see Howie Long smoke a cigar, 12 minutes and 40 seconds into the movie,
you can
watch Howie Long smoke a cigar. It looks like it's probably a Connecticut or something. It looked pretty mild.
Yeah, it looked pretty long.
Yeah.
Light colored.
Mm-hmm.
But I still give the movie a thumbs up just for being a fun popcorn
action. It is definitely. If you go in knowing that it is it's basically just a 90s or it's like a late 90s, early 2000s action movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have some cheesy stuff to it, but it's also really, really fun. The action set pieces were well done.
Mm-hmm.
The one at the end is fantastic. I mean, just, you know, watching Kevin Costner go crazy and shoot everybody is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's probably how they sold the movie to him. It's like, you're going to be a badass in this. Mm-hmm. You're going to shoot all kinds of cops. He's like, all right, let's do it. I get to use one of them big guns. It goes, yeah, you get to do that, you know. That's probably how it was sold to him.
I remember when he was being interviewed, you know, promoting the movie.
Yeah.
I think it was Matt Lauer or somebody said, so how many people do you kill in this movie? And he goes, a lot.
That's
a lot.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Because he does. But, yeah, I liked it.
It's a fun movie. It's definitely a fun movie.
Oh, and I remember what I was going to say. Yeah, Costner's the bad guy. But I like that they didn't over-accentuate either one. They both got a lot of equal lines. You know, if this was like a Paul Newman, Steve McQueen thing,
mm-hmm.
I think McQueen would have been okay.
Because exactly.
he's the bitch of Newman, get more lines or something. No, I thought it was very evenly divided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could see why you would like the Kurt Russell character better. You could see why you would like the Costner character better.
Yeah.
You know, just depending on how you want it.
Weird because I was so like, at a point, I was like, get Kurt off the screen. I'm tired of him being a pussy and, you know, just did the whole family thing. And, oh, God, here he goes again. Right. Kind of schmaltzy, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But then, you know, he holds his own later at certain other scenes. And Kevin's just like a badass. And you kind of like, there's parts where you really kind of hate him. Like, oh, he's a dick, you know. But then he's also cool. So it's just, it's a weird, you know, it has that Tarantino kind of feel where it's every bad guy is a good guy and every good guy is a bad guy. You know, they both, it's two sides of that coin. And you get to see both of it played, which really... Those two characters, Kurt Russell's character and Kevin Costner's characters, are really the only two deep characters in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not even that deep. I mean, they're pretty shallow, but they have enough to do that they keep them interesting. And Courtney Cox's character...
She's worthless. She's just eye candy.
She's eye candy, and she's like, oh, I fell in love with the moment I saw you. Like, really?
She's
whiny.
Just kinda,
yeah.
You know, she's like, shut up.
She's there because she's got a nice ass, and she looks good in that movie.
Yeah.
Now, that's really the only extent of why she exists.
David Arquette's in it just because his wife was in it.
Exactly.
And, you know, they wanted to work together or something.
And Christian Slater, you know, I mean, those three guys, they were so extraneous, they didn't even really need to be there except for that one shootout. I'm surprised they didn't kill them all during the shootout.
Yeah,
you know?
Just have them do that.
Other than, you know, they had to have that face off later, you know.
Yeah.
So but definitely a fun movie. Out of, you know, if we're gonna give it let's do a Stogie rating here. How many Stogies would you give it out of five?
Three
and a half.
Yeah,
I go three.
Yeah,
three Stogies out of five. We're doing Stogie reviews, I guess.
Stogies.
We give it Stogies. So yeah, but that's what I would give it to. I mean, it's definitely a fun movie. If you haven't ever seen it, And you didn't have a reason to see it, but you like cigars. You know what? Light up a cigar, watch this movie, have a good time.
Yeah, you probably have the guys, you know, over.
You get a nice Toro or a Churchill. You'll probably have it the whole movie, and then you'll be done by the end of the movie.
There you go.
And great credit sequence. Watch all the credits. Yeah. Kurt Russell does his best as far as Elvis impersonations go.
Right.
And there's some really cool bloopers.
Costner is a funny ad lib.
A little funny ad lib blooper at the end there. Yeah. I love that you can hear the director go, "Leave it. No, stay where you are. Don't do it again." He's like all pissed, you know.
But, yeah. Okay, if you're a first-time director, are you going to yell at Costner or Kurt Russell? First of all, Costner's won Academy Award for directing. I'm not yelling at him. Mm, right. But I'm sure not, you know, yelling at Kurt because I have respect for him. But, you know, but he's pissed that Costner pulls an ad-lib.
Yep. So. Yeah, you can tell just by how he's like, even that, stay.
Well, Kurt laughs. Kurt cracks up at it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he does. Now, the guy had done a TV show before, and he'd done one film called Lowball. I don't know what that is. Oh. It was probably a straight-to-video thing. Two undercover cops blow their cover while investigating a heroin ring. It has Peter Green. And that's really all the people I know from this movie.
I forgot about something. This literally just popped into my head. What they did with this movie, this is like right after Blair Witch, so they tried to market it use the internet to market it.
Yep.
And they wrote a web series.
Yeah, I remember that.
A cartoon web series of what it was like when Kurt Russell and Costner were in prison and how they planned this whole heist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes, like 8-minute episodes or something. And it was animated. And those were kind of cool, and they're hard to find. I tried to find them last night, and I couldn't find them.
Yeah, I think they're on the Blu-ray or something, or they're available that way. But I was just going to say that's listed in the filmography for Costner, I believe. But they're called something specific. Let me see. That's cool. I mean, that's something that they've done since then. Usually, it's on the sci-fi side of things, like Pitch Black. And those, you know, movies with Vin Diesel, they had little animated prequels. They're doing that now with a lot of the Marvel stuff. You know, so that's something that's being done now. But at that time,
I'd never seen it.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing. It's called The Road to Graceland.
That's right.
Yeah. The Road to Graceland. So they're out there if you can find them.
Yeah.
And they're highly entertaining as well. So, yeah, overall, 3 stars. Definitely give it a try. And if you haven't seen it, I'm pretty surprised. If you also, Waste of a Beautiful Car. I mean,
oh, yeah.
God, that hurt my soul when I watched that car go into the water.
I know.
Yeah. But overall, definitely a fun flick. All right. So
your wife's going to hate it, though.
Just know that it's not a chick flick at all, because women are totally extraneous in this movie, and they're seen as objects, and that's how they're played. And it's very much that tonality to things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think most women die in the movie besides Courtney Cox.
Right. High testosterone.
Yeah, high testosterone movie for sure. Yeah. So get a nice bowl of testosterone and watch it. Smoke a cigar. There you go. So we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to come back with some movie news.
Movie news.
We'll be back. All right. We're back for segment 2 of Cigars in Cinema. And now we have some entertainment news.
Entertainment news.
What do you got, Randy?
Well, on our previous show, what is the word? Incarnation?
Yep.
There was news that NBC had ordered 13 episodes of a Coach reboot, the Coach sitcom from the 90s with Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was kind of looking forward to at least seeing it to see how it would go. Well, apparently they've stopped after the pilot was screened.
Oh, yeah?
They were not happy with it, so they've canceled it already. Never even saw light of day.
Wow.
After a 13-episode order. That's pretty rare.
That must have really sucked.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I mean, that had to suck pretty hard for them to just kind of give up on it.
I mean, it was kind of a weird thing to bring that show back anyway. Because as I was reading on a site, you know, it's not like Friends or How I Met Your Mom, or, well, not that. That's still pretty recently. Seinfeld. It's not like Friends or Seinfeld where people are still talking about the show today from the 90s. Nobody talks about Coach. I love it. It doesn't do well in syndication, you know. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah.
But so it seemed like an odd choice to bring that back. But apparently Craig T. Nelson's show Parenthood was so popular that they thought maybe they could ride his recent popularity and turn it back into Coach. But not going to happen. Not going to do it.
Wow, that's too bad. Yeah. I mean, my wife watched him on Parenthood, and she loved him on that.
Did I say Parenthood when I mentioned his show?
I don't know. I don't know if he did, but that's what the show was. Yeah, but yeah. He was on Parenthood.
Whatever that show was. I thought I said yeah. Parenthood, but maybe not. As soon as you said it, I'm like, I don't think that's the word I said, but I don't know.
Right, right.
It happened more than 10 seconds ago, so I've forgotten.
Because we're old, yeah. Exactly. Because we're old.
Exactly.
And in other entertainment news, there was a sadness
yeah.
that's taken over the people that are fans of not only movies, but the horror genre. Wes Craven passed away
yes.
at the age of 76.
Icon, trailblazer, trendsetter.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. The guy, Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, everybody thinks of Nightmare on Elm Street when you think of Wes Craven, but really, the guy was, before that, I mean, he had The Hills Have Eyes, he had Last House on the Left. He's been doing horror for a long time. Yeah. And just kind of took it to a different level than was really out there at that time. Most of the stuff was slasher flicks. Mm-hmm. And while Freddy Krueger was a slasher, in essence, he had a little more going on.
Right.
So it was a little different than what was out there. And it was definitely something that was he's going to be sorely missed. I think he's brought something to entertainment that hadn't been there before, brought some uniqueness to that to the horror genre. And that's definitely going to be missed. And then to bring it back even again.
Yeah, to reinvent it.
Reinvent it and reinvente the genre
right.
and, with the Scream
with
series.
Scream series, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, excellent. That's who can say that, you know? Yeah. You look at what guys like John Carpenter did with Halloween. Mm-hmm. John Carpenter never had another Halloween. You know, he had other
the thing,
stuff that
but
he
the
did.
Thing was a remake of another movie.
Yeah, but I mean, that wasn't something that started. There wasn't a Thing 2 and a Thing 3 and a Thing 4. No. There was a reboot of the Thing, but that was really about it. And, but to take that genre and put it on its ear twice. That's pretty out there.
It's impressive. You know, my first exposure probably would have been The Hills Have Eyes. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that at the theater, at the drive-in.
I saw it on video. It was the first time I saw it, yeah.
And then I remember being at the video store, or a video store. It was a Friday night. My dad was going to work late. My mom liked horror movies. I liked horror movies. So we were at the video store. Mm-hmm. And I saw this video, and it said, first time released in the U.S. You know, this is like 82.
Yeah,
and it was Last House on the Left. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Mom, this looks... And she's like, I don't know. He says, I don't know if you're old enough to watch that. And I'm like, you took me to see Texas Chainsaw when I was 4.
Right.
I think I'm old enough to watch it. She's like, right. Okay. So we rented Last House on the Left. And to be honest, I wasn't impressed at the time. The cops were too Keystone Cop-ish. I know now why they were.
Yeah.
But, you know, that kind of was so silly that it made me not buy the serious part as well.
Yeah.
Until the very end. You know, when the parents turn... You know, go psycho on them, you know.
Yeah.
That's different. And then I kind of caught it, and I was like, ooh, wow, this is an intense movie.
Yeah.
And the scene with the mom and the one guy. Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those movies I saw with my parents, and I was highly uncomfortable watching that with my parents because it was a pretty brutal movie. You know, it's a pretty damn brutal flick.
Yeah.
For that time, I mean, the level of rape that was in there and then all the other stuff, it was really graphic and believable. You know, special effects were all done in camera or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was all... You know, real-time special effects, no CGI.
Right.
That was the one... If I had one fault with the reboot of Last House on the Left, it was the use of, you know, CGI. Most of the effects were in camera, but some of it was a little... But I still, you know, even then, the reboot was pretty darn effective as well.
I liked the reboot a lot.
Yeah. It was actually pretty effective.
Actually got even more intense than I really expected it to. Mm-hmm. Usually they soften movies nowadays. They didn't soften.
Oh, yeah, no. Especially the end of that thing. No. It was like, wow. Yeah.
And then we, of course, then he goes on to Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And really, he only did the first one in New Nightmare.
Yeah,
as far as directing goes.
Yeah, he still had some producing, rights and stuff like that.
Right.
But for the most part, he's it's really that New Nightmare. And New Nightmare, the only reason they came back was because they were going to let him do something different. And for him to come back, he had to go outside the realm of what it was and transcend it. And I think
he
really
to get away
did.
From it. He did that movie with Meryl Streep.
He did
some other stuff.
A horror music movie of the heart.
And a movie of his, a horror film of his that. Flew totally under the radar, especially in the credits this week, you know, when we're reading all this stuff, is People Under the Stairs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I liked that film. Did you like
that? That was fun. Everett McGill, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just doing some crazy stuff in that movie, yeah. So it's definitely a cool flick.
I liked that movie a lot. And there's a girl that was in it. She was the main girl. And we're being handed cigars. This is always
fun. Yep.
And
it's always good.
The main girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'd only seen her in one other thing, and it was Dabney Coleman's Fox series, Drexel's Class, or whatever, and last like 1 year, and she played his daughter. I've never seen her before. I remember thinking she was kind of cute, but she had like this weird mole or something on her eye or face or something. Yeah. I don't remember that.
This is the People on the Stairs chick?
Yeah.
Oh, you got me, man.
I had just seen that Dabney Coleman series, and then I saw this movie, and I'm like, oh, this chick's going to be big, and I've never seen her in anything since.
Hmm. Was she the daughter?
Yeah.
A.J. Langer?
Yeah, that's her name.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
What's she wind up doing? Anything?
I don't know. Let's see what A.J. Langer's done in the past here. She was in Escape from L.A.
Okay.
people under the stairs, and a bunch of other nothings. Meet the Peoples. Meet the Peoples. Yeah, Peetles. Meet the Peetles.
Okay.
I don't know.
There's a classic.
A bunch of nothing. Yeah, a bunch of nothing. So she didn't really do a whole lot.
Yeah. Started off pretty decent.
Really cute, though.
Yeah.
Look at her.
Yeah, she's aged really well, but at the time, there was something about her. I don't remember what it was, but there was something about her that kind of creeped me out.
Oh, yeah?
And then, but I could tell that she had a chance at being kind of hot, but because she was like 12 or 13, and I was like 16.
Yeah.
So it was still okay for me to think she was cute, but not, you know.
In a creepy way, yeah.
But not active.
Exactly.
On it. Not active on it.
Exactly.
Jared Fogle.
Jeez. No.
But, but I thought that movie was really good, and I didn't even want to see it, and somebody rented it, and I wound up liking that movie.
Yeah, that's a cool flick. That's a cool flick.
So then he goes to, gets out of horror, and then stumbles upon Scream, or the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like you said, just reinvented it, reinvigorated it, poked fun at it,
yep.
Glorified it. It was weird how they were able to lump all that into this, to that. And the first three are fine. I mean, I love the first one's great. The second two are okay. The fourth one was horrible.
And a lot of people like the fourth one, so it just depends.
Yeah.
I mean, the fourth one has a 6.2 rating on IMDb.
Okay.
So it's a little bit higher than the third one and the second one, I think.
Yeah.
But, it's all personal preference. The third one got a 5.5.
Wow.
And the second one got a 6.1.
Okay.
So it'd be first, second, and then fourth, and then third would be last. Now, I think Wes Craven's, my favorite movie of his, was Vampire in Brooklyn with, it wasn't. The Eddie Murphy vampire one. This is a attempt at comedy, really didn't work out for him that well.
Right.
But you're also picking up on Eddie Murphy way into his career when he was no longer funny.
Right.
So
yeah.
That was kind of you can only do so much, Wes. You got to give him a shot. One that I liked, a couple of his that I liked also, one that I thought was really creepy and fun and well-written was Serpent in the Rainbow with Bill Pullman. And then Shocker was just a hoot. I mean, Shocker was so stupid. The plot was ridiculous, but it was so fun.
Oh, I forgot that
Mitch Pileggi, where he plays the convict killer that gets zapped into electricity.
Yeah,
and
right.
So stupid.
Yeah.
But it was so fun, too. It was just such a weird, weird movie.
Well, we're going to name drop for a second.
Okay.
We were at Texas Frightmare Weekend this past year,
and
we got the pleasure of meeting Jack Sholder.
Yes, we did.
The director of Nightmare 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you noticed on Facebook his comments, but he had nothing but kind words to say about Wes. He said it was a dream to work with. He never got in his way if he wanted anything, and then Wes never said, hey, you're changing my movie,
you're doing it wrong.
He backed him up, and he said it was a wonderful guy to work with and to know, and it was kind of cool that we got to meet that guy this year.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
Very cool.
And gave him cigars, and
And gave him a little education on cigars, which is real cool.
Cool.
Check out those interviews if you haven't seen those. We got a lot of interviews on the YouTube page, and also on the iTunes and the iHeartRadio over at the Texas Frightmare Fest. So, a lot of good information there, and a lot of good fun stuff. So, any other news that you have entertainment wise? I got a couple things.
Go ahead.
This one's kind of neat here. Rocker Avril Lavigne has split from Nickelback's Chad Kroeger. So
I forgot they were together.
Nickelback's going to be very sad. He'll put out a record of just sadness.
Oh, that means their music's going to suck now.
Even more than it sucked previously.
Jeez. Well, now
that wasn't the news I was going to read, but I just thought it was funny. Here's one that's actually kind of interesting. DreamWorks Studios is actually breaking away from Disney. And they're going to be looking at maybe going to Universal. So that's a big move for Spielberg to walk away from all that Disney money and go over to Universal.
Yeah, didn't the whole Star Wars franchise just go to Disney?
Yep.
So I wonder if he got pissed off.
Maybe that's Lucas.
That's I know, that's what I'm saying. Maybe he's thinking Lucas is getting too much money.
I don't know. You never know.
Yeah.
But so that's a kind of a big move there. I think Universal could use a shot in the arm for sure.
Yeah.
Having him go over there for sure. But yeah. Yee. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, that would be huge.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very huge.
And Donald Trump hopes to run against Kanye West in 2020. That's going to be the year that we all die in a flaming fire from hell, because that's going to be the end of the world right there. Jeez. What the heck is this world coming to?
I saw something on Facebook, and it was like 2016 Trump and Vice President Camacho.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Terry Crews. Just get Terry Crews to run as Camacho. That'd be awesome. I'm surprised those commercials haven't come out already.
Exactly. we're not being political here at all.
Ex-wrestler / porn star Camacho.
But not to be political or anything, but it is it's just comedy gold to think that a guy who had his own celebrity reality show is actually leading in the polls for president. That's pretty wild.
That's what this world has come to. And I think a lot of it is people saying, wouldn't it be funny if?
Yeah.
But not realizing that could actually happen. It could actually happen. Right, you know, and then what?
Yeah.
And then what are you gonna do? Oh my gosh, that is a scary, scary thought, people. I don't know. I mean, you know,
I like Trump, to be honest. I'm not necessarily interested in him as president, but I don't know. I like a guy that just says what the fuck he wants to say, and he's got the money. He didn't really give a shit.
Yeah,
you know, I respect that because I wish I could do it.
Yeah, exactly. I liked Ross Perot too, but I wouldn't vote for him. You know,
Perot was annoying.
He was hilarious.
Dana Carvey as Ross Perot was hilarious.
I would vote for Dana Carvey as Ross Perot. Actually, I think I would probably vote for that. I would vote for Dana Carvey as George Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
Over what we have options right now,
that's sad. That's just sad.
That's just sad. It is totally just sad. Wow,
it's a funny world we're living in. What did we get given?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it yet.
CAO Pallone?
I think so, yeah. Nice. CAO Pallone.
Cool.
So the rep for
General
just walked in and handed us a couple cigars. That's always nice.
Thank you, Kenny Bourne.
Thank you, Kenny. So much. Always good to get free gifts.
Yes.
All right. So
RIP Wes Craven.
Yes, definitely.
He had a couple later movies that we didn't get to.
Red Eye. Red Eye was pretty entertaining.
Solid. Mm-hmm. Decent popcorn movie.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw the one with Meryl Streep because I try to avoid Meryl Streep movies.
Yeah.
But it got great reviews.
Yeah, it was okay. For a Meryl Streep movie, it was okay. It just was, you know, it
if
was
Meryl
out of
Streep
the,
farted, she got an Academy Award nomination for
she
it.
She may so. Have for that one.
Yeah,
she
jeez.
Meryl Streep farts. That'd be one of the Idiocracy movies that would come out after the whole. Yeah.
Yeah, have Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks fart, and boom, you got your Best Actor and Best Actress nominations
exactly.
right there.
Yep.
Crazy.
Fart their acceptance.
He's got a new
speeches.
Movie coming out that looks interesting, and I can't remember what it is.
Tom Hanks. Oh, yes. The one about the whole World War II thing or whatever. Yeah,
that looks interesting.
Yeah, it looks pretty interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, that's going to end our movie news or entertainment news segment.
Right.
And we'll come back for the last third. We're just going to give you kind of a quick little update on what we're going to be doing next week and where you can find us. We'll be back. All right, so we're back for the last segment of Cigars in Cinema. And what are we going to be reviewing next week, Randy?
We are going to be reviewing a classic.
A classic?
Another classic, or another guy movie, but this one is a classic.
Classic guy movie. What is it?
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Nice!
With the great Paul Newman and Robert Redford.
Excellent, excellent.
Probably the first buddy movie of all time.
Yeah, it's one of the first ones I remember, yeah.
The buddy comedy movie, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Man, I haven't seen it in a long time. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen that, too. Yeah.
We'll see how it holds up.
I think it'll hold up well. I remember that movie.
The montages were terrible. They were terrible even when the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, you know, the dialogue and everything's great.
Cool.
You know.
I've got some interesting
stories about that movie, too, that we can share.
Oh, excellent.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, back to the first movie.
Oh, 3,000 Miles
Away. I had a little tidbit I was going to say. If you watch that movie, pay attention to how Kevin Costner smokes cigarettes. Because he doesn't smoke cigarettes in real life, so he doesn't inhale. So he's literally it's like he's smoking a cigar. He pulls,
pull and puff,
blows,
pull and puff,
pulls,
pull and puff. Yeah,
it's like, you know, and you can tell he's really uncomfortable smoking a cigarette. He just doesn't like it.
Yeah,
and so he, being a badass, should have smoked cigars. That would have been even cooler.
It would have been cooler for sure.
And in this movie, since then, he's had cigars. If he's got a prop, he's usually got cigars now as opposed to cigarettes.
And that's what I was wondering about, like with the Howie Long thing. You know, I think that was. Was that a choice because Howie Long smoked cigars? Was that written into the script? Was that just Howie just wanting business to have
could
you know, something
to the
to,
character because he's an ex-military chopper pilot? Probably cigar sounds like something this guy would be smoking.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's something he brought to the character. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. I don't imagine Howie's like, I'm going to bring something to my character. I just can't see Howie Long doing that. I don't know why. Did you ever see that one Firestorm he did?
Nah,
it was like his big action attempt at an action movie thing.
I've started it. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I never was a big Howie Long fan. I like him better now that he's not playing. I hated him when he played.
Really?
Because I just thought he was overrated. I thought he was a really good player.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was the other day I was bored in the middle of the night, so I was watching an old Dallas Cowboys Oakland Raiders game.
Okay.
From the 80s.
Where the heck do you watch those?
They're on YouTube. They're popping up everywhere on YouTube.
All right.
And Figured Howie Long's name mentioned like three times, and for a dominant defensive player, you know. Meanwhile, Randy White for the Cowboys was just all over the place. And I remember at the time thinking, why doesn't Randy White get as much publicity as Howie Long? But which is kind of stupid because Randy White did get a lot of publicity.
Yeah.
But since he's gone to Fox Sunday, I like him. I think he's a very good analyst. Not a very good actor, but
he's definitely not a very good actor.
He seems like a nice guy. He seems very affable. He doesn't, doesn't seem like a dick in any way. And I'm saying that because he could kick my ass.
He didn't have a whole lot to do in 3,000 Miles to Graceland, for that matter.
He was just a cool copter pilot.
Copter pilot. Yeah, that's a word. Is that a word?
I don't know.
We're making it up.
Chopper pilot.
Yeah. There you go. Chopper pilot. That's the word we're looking for. Two old guys podcasting.
That's right.
That's what the show's called. We're changing the name right now.
That's right. Ooh, we should have done that. No. Welcome to
Two Old Guys Podcasting.
Old guys potting.
I remember back in the day when I was a pod person.
I didn't even know what a podcast was.
Right.
Because they didn't have
I thought it had something to do with fishing. Yeah.
So the Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
That's cool, man. I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, if you guys haven't seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, shame on you. If you have, and it's been a while, give it a watch so you can listen along with our review of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and we'll talk about all the cigar details in the movie.
That'll be fun.
All right, so we'll see you guys next week.
And where can they find us, Brandon?
Oh, man. I don't know. iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spreaker.
Stitcher.
Podcastland.
Podomatic.
Yep, that place too. And we have the Twitter at Cigars and Cinema, all one word.
I'm at Randy Rankin 43.
Mm-hmm. At Captain Funky Pants on the Twitter.
There you go.
And if you're all Instagrammy, then we'll have the Instagram with the PDR underscore Brandon.
AJF Randy.
Probably need to do an Instagram for us.
Yeah, let's do an Instagram one next time. We'll give you an Instagram name next time.
Look up Instagram Cigars and Cinema. Maybe we'll be there.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Hopefully by the time this airs, we will be there.
I'm doing it now. No one steal it.
Anyway, hopefully you guys will join us on this ride, and we'll have a good time.
Yep, it's a good time. See you next time.
Take care.